Any discussion of black nationalism or Pan-Africanism would have to include a lengthy reference to the life and work of Malcolm X. Born in 1919, Malcolm Little, later to be known as Malcolm X, would move through various trials and tribulations to become a minister in the Nation of Islam, its most prominent spokesperson and organizer throughout the 1950s and 1960s, and later the founder of the Organization of Afro-American Unity. From the time of Malcolm's expulsion from the Nation of Islam in 1963 until his death in 1965, Malcolm spoke nationally and internationally almost without interruption and developed significant links with leaders on the African continent. He made inroads into the existing civil rights movement and organization, and he increasingly came under the surveillance of the New York City police and the FBI. Recent years have seen the reexamination of his work, his life, and the thoughts of Malcolm X. Joining Africa Today to discuss Malcolm X is Dr. Abdullah Kalimat, a professor of Africana Studies and Sociology at the University of Toledo, Ohio. Dr. Kalimat is the editor of the website, which is entitled Malcolm X Research Site. He's also the editor of H Afro American Web List Server, which is a list server on Africana studies and history and information. And he also works with the Black Radical Congress. Abdul, thanks for joining Africa Today.
Thank you for having me.
Good. Why this interest in developing the website? Where does this ideal grow from that it would be good to have a website on Malcolm X? And let the listeners know that it's www.brothermalcolm.net. Where did this ideal come from, Abdul?
Well, I think there are two main sort of sources of inspiration for this site. The first has to do with the absolutely innovative and systemic rupture that the internet brings to information. It creates new conditions, and it was these new conditions that creates a new ball game, a new playing field for black intellectual history, the radical black tradition. And then secondly, with regard to that radical black tradition, Malcolm X is sort of the key paradigmatic figure, the major voice. Things changed after 1965, between 1960 and 65, when Malcolm had his greatest impact. Not only did ideological differences and innovations occur in the black liberation movement, but every major field, every aspect of black intellectual and radical thinking shifted and changed. And so Malcolm becomes a point of reference for all ideological traditions and all theoretical disciplines. And so because cyberspace gives a new opportunity, because Malcolm is so significant, that led us to the site.
Talk about some of what you laid out there, those key ideological and changes that occurred between 1960 to 1965 that Malcolm is so much a part of from your analysis.
Well, first and foremost, out of the late 50s into the 60s, the mass movement of social protest, and it's hard for some people, I guess, today who weren't a part of that to understand what is meant by mass movement. Because it was a very rare occurrence in African American history, because it was so pervasive in every community, in every institution, almost every day. The fundamental issues of black liberation were on the minds and in the discourse, in the discussions, in the barbershops, in the living rooms, everywhere. And so with this upsurge coming out of the South and expanding throughout the whole country, you had a challenge to America to live up to the democratic aspirations of its documents, of its basic political philosophy of democracy. When it became clear that the political system and the moral character of the country was unable to live up to these high ideals, in the black community it became clear that the unification of forces in struggle to create within the black community a basis for sustaining and affirming life, even with the country not making the final leap to democracy, would be necessary, and therefore black power emerged. The key ideological moment was in 1965, after Malcolm was assassinated, the demand for black power emerges a year later, in 1966. And that was the moment of ideological change from the civil rights movement to the black liberation movement. And it was this black liberation movement, now rooted in the inner cities of the North, that then gave rise to a whole new series of leaders, a whole new set of organizations, like the Black Panther Party, the League of Revolutionary Black Workers, and then on eventually into the African Liberation Support Committee, and so forth. So that moment between 65 and 66, where the mass movement of civil rights had exhausted the fight for democracy, that led to this ideological shift. And I might add, this shift was consistent with what happened throughout the world with the national liberation movements, that the demand for democracy, the demand for inclusion, really, in the global systems run by the major powers in Europe and the West, simply wasn't going to be realized. And therefore, people had to turn inward. People had to look at strategies that were based on the bottom up, as Malcolm put it, from the field Negroes of the world. And I think that is the significant contribution that Malcolm made. He was a symbol of the field Negroes of the world.
You know, in your study guide, and we'll talk a bit about how the website is organized, in the study guide you refer to the speech of Malcolm in 1963, Message to the Grassroots, which was in Detroit, and you mentioned that on one of the questions, you said that the house and the field Negro still exist today, that dynamic still exists today. What did you mean by that, Abdul?
Well, it's interesting because as we live out our history, so often it seems like we're living out our past. By field Negro, by house Negro, let me start there. What I mean is that we now have more than ever before highly symbolic individuals located within the mainstream institutions of society, the leading universities, leading institutions of government, leading boards of Fortune 500 companies, etc. And these are individuals who operate within these structures without being able to fundamentally change these structures. And people end up rationalizing and approving of these structures. It's sort of like when Malcolm said, when the massa in a plantation says, he's sick, the house Negro says,
we sick.
Are we sick, boss?
Right.
And we have a leading professor at Harvard doing a program on Africa, going out of his way to talk about his beloved Harvard. This is very different from the position taken by Professor Guinier, who is the first head of Black Studies at Harvard, who mainly talked about the tension between the aspirations of the Black movement in Black Studies versus the historical legacy of Harvard. The contradiction between the two is what he emphasized. Now we have someone who goes out of his way to talk about Harvard as his beloved Harvard. And so I would give those as sort of just a reference. I think Clarence Thomas, I think so many other people represent the house Negro today. The field Negro, on the other hand, has also changed, but has become a much more fundamental threat to the existence of the status quo in the United States. And that is this. Beginning in the 1970s, there was a fundamental transformation beginning with the economy, with the emergence of information technology and a change in the organization of production, distribution, and therefore consumption of the goods and services this economy produces. We now have, for the first time, a qualitative decline in demand for labor, particularly lower-skilled labor. This has been the great contribution of the African worker, the African-American worker, in the history of agricultural production of cotton through factory production. Once the information society emerged, we began to get new concepts like the permanent unemployed, the structural unemployed, and then we got the underclass, etc. The point is that we now have huge sections of the African-American population that are delinked, that are outside of the production relations of industrial society and aren't likely to ever work permanently again. So it's even worse, because the field Negro, that image was somebody who was out in the field with a job. Field meant you were working in the field as an agricultural worker. Today, field Negro means you ain't got no job, are not likely to get a job. Therefore, when Malcolm in mid-60s, said that he saw a nightmare and not a dream, sort of signifying on the King March on Washington speech, he was talking more about now than then, because then, when he said it, if somebody got fired in a factory in Detroit, they could easily get a job the next day, or really the next shift at another plant. Today, somebody in a factory loses a job where they're making $17, $18, $19, or $20 an hour. They are never going to get a job making that same amount of money.
We're speaking to and we're listening to the voice of Dr. Abdullah Kalimai. He's a professor of Africana Studies and Sociology at the University of Toledo at Ohio. He is the editor for the website Malcolm X, a research site. That site is located at www.brothermalcolm.net. He is also a member and working member of the Black Radical Congress, and we're talking about the Malcolm X website and about Malcolm X. How is the website organized, Abdul? What is it for people who click onto it? What will they see there? What are the categories, and what have you done with it?
Okay, well, the first thing, of course, they'll see is a large X, and so the first screen is really sort of the icon of the X. And if you click on that, the second screen that you'll see is broken down into seven categories, including an extensive bibliography where all the books, CDs, and videos are listed, as well as an opportunity to click on to a site where you can also purchase these. There is a full chronology that details the events of his life and his family. There is a site on the family, which includes even from material that other families' members have developed, three generations prior to Malcolm. So there's a full family page that includes all of the links to the other material that's been on the web, including a lot of material about Betty Shabazz, the late widow of Malcolm X, and as well as his daughters. We also have an interesting page called Words, Spoken and Written by Malcolm X. And in addition to a listing of every speech, interview, panel discussion, and so on of record, we have links to where those actual texts are available, as well as sound bites of up to 5 minutes from most of the major speeches. In addition to that, we also have a webliography, meaning a listing, sort of like a bibliography, only this webliography is a listing of websites, of all the other material that other people have put up on Malcolm, including extensive listing of how people outside the United States have created websites on Malcolm X. We update the page every month. So, for example, last month we included a inventory of material that's currently on display at Emory University in Atlanta that includes letters, even letters as early as 1941. I just wanted to also make a slight correction to your introduction. I think you said that Malcolm was born in 1919. I think the actual date was 1925,
okay.
Just as a matter of record. So we've got letters from Malcolm mentioned in this Words as early as 1941, which means when he was 16, all the way to the end of his life. And so anyway, that's the Emory site. And this month, we went back and I had an opportunity in 1992 to go to the auction of the Alex Haley estate in Knoxville, Tennessee. And there was a considerable amount of material on Malcolm that was a part of that auction. And so, just as a matter of historical record and for real sort of Malcolm students, we this month just put up the complete listing of all the material that was in the auction, as well as a specific listing of the Malcolm materials. I mean, for example, there were four chapters that weren't published in the final edition of the autobiography of Malcolm X that were auctioned and that are currently at the Black Museum in Detroit. There's also the final copy of the autobiography with Malcolm's final revisions in his hand and then Haley's final revisions in his hand, two different color inks. So that sort of thing. So every month we update the site so that there is new information, and we will be putting up a full photo gallery. We will be putting up a full list of conferences that have been held on Malcolm, including some of the actual proceedings of those conferences, and so on. This site will continue to grow for the next few years to come.
How many people are working on the site, Abdullah? I know it's not just you.
No, but on the other hand, I have been at this for some time.
Good.
We are, the University of Toledo is partnering with 21st Century Books in Chicago, and we have people who have also been studying Malcolm for a long time, not only sending in information, but sending in corrections to stuff we have put up, or question marks, silences that they have the answers to. And so I would say that there is a network of people out there who have been sending material in. When you go to the website, you will see the image of a spider, a small little spider throughout the website. When you click on that spider, you come to a form that you can fill in and send electronically, just as an email, to us, where we collect feedback, including suggestions for new information. I mean, for example, on the Emory material, someone sent me an email saying that they heard that this material was available. I called Emory University, and the librarian then faxed me the description of the material. That's how we got that. So people are very helpful and accommodating.
Good. You know, I noticed that one of the areas we had talked about in kind of the pre-questionnaire was this connection. You mentioned it early on, this connection between Malcolm and Africa. And maybe I'm sure there's a lot more to be done on that connection. But say something about Malcolm's visits to Africa, because he did have the opportunity to meet with some very, very significant leaders in that early 1960 period, Nigeria, also in Ghana, and also in East Africa.
Right. Well, one of the key figures in this whole story is Abdul Rahman Babu from Tanzania, actually from Zanzibar. He was part of the revolution there and really was one of the key contacts between Malcolm and revolutionary forces in Africa, and was very much involved with us over the last 20 years, really, in the Black liberation struggle as well as the liberation struggles in Africa. He participated in the 1990 conference on Malcolm in New York. Well, Malcolm, when he was in New York and worked with Malcolm and spoke with Malcolm on platforms, including that time when Che Guevara was supposed to come to New York, to Harlem, and wasn't able to get there, and there are many pictures showing Malcolm and Babu together. When Malcolm went to Africa, he went as a person who was in the most advanced level of the revolutionary impulse of the nationalist movement in the United States. And what happened is he sat down with people in Africa who were leading revolutionary forces at that time, from Nyerere in Tanzania to Sekou Touré, etc. I mean, he was talking to people who were at the cutting edge, and as well as people who were leading organizations engaged in armed struggle, mainly in Southern Africa. Now, Malcolm at that time was going through a rapid process of ideological and political transformation. First and foremost, placing the African-American struggle in a global context, coming to understand the limitations of the ideological terms of struggle that he was familiar with when placed in a global context. I mean, for example, color. Color means one thing specifically in the United States, just as it even has regional differences in the United States. But it's impossible to take the U.S. racial categories and assume that they're the same everywhere in the world. And I think those are the kinds of things, this using the U.S. as a frame of reference to the world versus going out into the world and actually talking to people and learning about the world and therefore coming back with a fresh approach to the United States. And I think that that transformation and moving from what in the world context would have been a racialist approach to understanding history to a more materialist approach of looking at the color and class dynamics of every society on their own terms, while in the same context understanding the global connection that comes from the global slave trade, et cetera, et cetera. The point is that Malcolm rapidly developed as a mature global thinker. The problem, of course, that he had as he was developing is that the people on the ground in the United States inside the Black Liberation Movement were not having those same experiences at the global level. And so there was a tension between how Malcolm was rapidly developing and the distance between that and where people were, activists were, in the Black Liberation Movement.
Abdul, in jumping in here, has there been any reconciliation, historical reconciliation, between Malcolm X's legacy and work and his participation and legacy with the Nation of Islam? For many years, it was almost not talked about or talked about in less than complimentary dynamics. How have you seen that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The Nation of Islam has not been, I think, analyzed to give people a full understanding. There were always contradictions in the Nation of Islam, particularly beginning in the 60s, late 50s, 60s. For example, many people have not discussed the role that socialists and communists played inside the Nation of Islam, particularly in editing Muhammad Speaks. In the height of the Vietnam conflict, when we read Muhammad Speaks, we read about Vietnam based on press releases that were coming out of Hanoi and pictures that were coming out of Hanoi. And so black people took to that newspaper, not just because they were reading about the mothership or the myth of Yaqub, that is the thinking and the imagery projected by Elijah Muhammad, that was in the centerfold of the newspaper. We were really reading about the Vietnam War, about Cuba, about all kinds of things that were happening from a more progressive and enlightened set of politics, which were guided by the people that Elijah Muhammad had hired to run Muhammad Speaks. So the reason I'm mentioning that is because as Malcolm develops, Malcolm is developing from the ideological cul-de-sac of the old members who were essentially a religious group albeit with a social critique. Nevertheless, a religious group, a closed religious group, to one that was actively open to the developing forces of black liberation. I think that in one sense, there's never going to be a reconciliation, because what happened is Malcolm changed. And there was a split in the Nation of Islam. A whole group of people left with Malcolm. And because they left to be part of the broader development of black liberation, what happened to the people who stayed in the Nation of Islam is they ended up initially even drawing themselves into a tighter knit group. For example, when they were announced as now being not the black man, which was the main identity language in opposition to the so-called Negro. But then as 1966 occurred, black power emerged, we all became black people. They had to make themselves even more distinct in order to have their unique identity, and therefore they had announced themselves as Belalians. Now, so you get the Malcolm motion versus the other motion more back towards religion. And of course, the Belalian motion then leads towards Orthodox Islam and Sunni Islam. what you get as a reaction to that is the emergence of not only Louis Farrakhan, but several other split-off groups of the Nation of Islam that react to that motion going toward Orthodox Islam by reestablishing the old 1950s and before thinking of Elijah Muhammad. So you have three different dynamics out of the Nation of Islam. You have Malcolm moving more into the Black Liberation Movement, into global revolutionary thinking. You've got people who are moving back toward Orthodox Islam, and then you have people trying to, you know, give rebirth to the old thinking of Elijah Muhammad.
You're listening to the voice of Abdullah Kalima. He's a professor of Africana Studies and Sociology at the University of Toledo in Ohio. He is the webmaster for the site that we're talking about today. We're actually talking more about Malcolm than we're talking about the site, but the site is located at www.brothermalcolm.net, and I encourage people who have web access or who can get the web access to take a look at it. It's very well developed. It's very well laid out. You have an opportunity to look at a chronology of Malcolm, which I have certainly not seen before. You have a chance to have audio sound bites. There's discussion about family, about exhibits, about institutions that are named after Malcolm X, about programs on Malcolm X. And in some senses, we might easily say it's the one-stop Malcolm X shop. Dr. Al-Kalimat is also a editor of the H. Afro-American listserver, and he also works at the Black Radical Congress. Abdullah, I'm sorry that we're running out of time here, and in retrospect, I wish that we probably would have thought about talking much further, but those times will come back again. But is there any last words you'd like to say about the site before we close up?
Well, the one thing I think that's important is the quote that that we put, the statement we put on the front of the site, which is, "Our greatest challenge is to follow Malcolm's method of critical, independent thinking." And I think that's what we hope will be accomplished, as we hope this is a statement, a bridge of his legacy to the new generations to come.
Okay.
I appreciate you having me on, and thank you very much.
It's certainly our pleasure, Abdul. We look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Oh, shit, Abdul, that was great, man.